Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
How are we going?
It's rolling.
So Cheesy Weasel asks Mark.
Oh yeah,
Cheesy.
How cheesy?
So Mark's seen Lady Gaga nude.
Oh yeah.
There may be people who are not aware that you have actually seen Lady Gaga nude.
Do you know what annoys me about this is that I've missed the most obvious gag.
Go on.
I should have said, I'm here to tell you, she's not a natural blonde.
Oh!
Which is a good joke, isn't it? Now, why didn't
it's
I put that in the other?
It's a good joke. It's a kind of glaringly obvious journalistic point, isn't
it,
really?
I can't believe that I didn't
is
put
it
that
day,
in there.
Day one of your journalist course?
Yeah, at one point I did see her without a wig on, so I know what her actual hair looks like. And it's, you know, it is very, very short and dyed blonde. But the fact that I... Anyway, you can fill in the gaps. Yes, right. I did see her completely naked.
Has anyone else on the pod seen any other pop stars starkers? I once interviewed Sting in a shower, and he was wearing only a towel.
You see, he...
On his head?
He's such a tart, isn't he? He doesn't just do that for the female journalist.
No, he doesn't.
You know, the thing about Sting is whenever he comes on stage, within 30 seconds, he's torn his shirt off, hasn't
yes.
he? Because it's contractually or just genetically programmed to do
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely.
So I see he tried that trick with you.
So that's the best we can do, Cheesy Weasel. Orange Pico Tea wishes to know, how would the top 40 look if it only included artists who wrote their own music and played their own instruments?
Well, that's... These days, it would look quite... I suppose quite different, wouldn't it?
It'd look more...
I'm trying to wallpaper over the terrible glaring error, Dave, and I don't know really what's in the top.
Yeah, but I think it's reasonable to assume that it's not people playing instruments that they learn themselves.
Most pop at R&B, I think, is they're written like comedies are. It's like teams of people, isn't it?
Yes. And things have flown to other people to add their bits.
Parts.
You see, because I'm gonna give you an answer, Orange Pico Tea. I think it'd be considerably more boring than it is now, actually. If it was full of kind of authentic artists, you know, come on, it's fun.
There'd be no Crazy in Love by Beyonce, would there?
Absolutely, yeah, where would you be?
You know, just because she didn't write it and play all the instruments.
Also, the hooky bit of Crazy in Love by Beyonce is an ancient sample, isn't it?
The Fleetwood Mac track, isn't it?
No, it's not Fleetwood Mac.
No, I'm thinking it's something else.
That horn riff, I don't know, is it Chilo's record or something like that? It goes back about 20 years or something, you know, so the hook is not done by anybody who got anything to do with the record.
In fact, it's a really depressing thought, because it'd probably be like going to the chart, being entirely full of groups, would probably sound like Atomic Rooster or something, you know.
I couldn't do with that.
No, it'd be frightening.
Adrian Specs, Fraser, this is for you. It's very cold. Please can Fraser supply a soup or stew recipe?
Well, I'll provide a link to this on the website for later on, but the best soup recipe is Thomas Keller's cauliflower soup recipe.
Okay.
And it's unusual for me to choose something that doesn't have a strange animal in it, but it is a brilliant recipe.
I wouldn't have thought cauliflower would be your first choice for a hearty broth.
It's an unbelievable, it's nectarious, if that's a word.
Okay, is it? All right, that's good.
So, catching up on the news this week, have we all seen Madonna doing a half-time low-key acoustic set at the Super Bowl?
Yes.
A quiet, intimate affair.
It's
fans only.
It's unplugged, isn't it?
Yes.
To just get her. It's, you know,
she could have made an effort. Dave.
It's like Ronnie and Keith and Bob Dylan at Live Aid, isn't it? Really, except with the addition of
she stumbles on half cut, doesn't she? 20 minutes late as well. That's the worst bit.
It is.
Hasn't bothered to brush her hair.
For those who haven't seen it, I watched it with my jaw dropping. Largely because not long before I'd actually watched, for the first time in years, the Elizabeth Taylor, Richard Burton film Cleopatra. Have you seen that recently?
Which is very firmly placed.
Completely
particularly based.
That opening scene when she...
Well, no, it's not an opening scene, isn't it? For those who haven't seen this film...
No, but the opening
film,
scene of Madonna.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah, sorry, yeah, yeah. Yes. The key scene in Cleopatra, which is a terrible old, ropey old film, but it's got one brilliant set piece right in the middle, which is Cleopatra's entry into Rome, accompanied by, I think, Rex Harrison's child. And she appears in the marketplace, and she's preceded by, you know, it's about 10 minutes before Liz Taylor actually heaves into view, you know, because it's just slaves pulling ropes, isn't it? You know, and you know, pulling along this huge, great kind of sphinx,
I think,
Liz Taylor's mounted on, and in you know, going in front of her, there are girls, you know. Throwing roses in the air, and there are dancing girls and all sorts of things. That's what Madonna's done.
Well, they've for obvious reasons replaced the slaves by a load of kind of rather butch looking Roman legionaries, aren't they? Or guys in armour. And it's the campest thing I've ever seen. It's fantastic.
So she obviously decided that I'm going to have a big entrance. What's the biggest entrance in entertainment?
Let's nick
it. It's Liz Taylor in Cleopatra. Yeah. Let's do that again. And it is extraordinary that you can... I mean, the amount of rehearsal that must have had to go into that. And what is it? You know, it's 10 minutes... in the middle of the football game. Then again, I suppose we're talking about it now, you know, so it's got a life beyond that.
But then I guess in terms of production values, that is the most concentrated 13 minutes available to anybody, isn't it? I mean, the Super Bowl halftime is the big opportunity, isn't it?
And you can't muck about with the timing, can you?
No, absolutely not.
You can't
so
go
you get
over time.
A medley of greatest hits. It's a bit like Live Aid, isn't it? You know, that she does something like four songs, doesn't she, all segment together?
Yeah, well, yeah, a new single
and
so
I think forth. Trips over at one point, but I don't know if anyone else noticed that. Maybe I was just, you know...
Of course, also, as is traditional nowadays with Madonna's huge, great set piece TV appearances, she is accompanied by MIA and who else?
CeeLo Green there, looking absolutely brilliant. You know the bit in, Those Magnificent Men and Their Flying Machines. Do you remember where they have
Cleopatra?
Yeah,
those.
Yeah, just a cinematic reference.
A
we got
references.
Yeah, that's right.
Very edgy.
From the Sublime to All Right.
Yeah,
you made
probably
a point.
Not seen this.
But there's a bit where they have the standoff between I think Terry Thomas and the German. You remember that?
It's brilliant.
And they choose blunderbusses and balloons at dawn. Anyway, the German in the big helmet. In that looks exactly like CeeLo Green in his tremendous armor, doesn't he? In this thing.
Did you see the Have you seen the Samsung advert? You know the advertising spots for this. I think it cost him $10 million for this 1.5 minute commercial, and it's the guy out of the darkness playing a song with a and for 1.5 minutes, and it's an extraordinary bit of music PR I've ever seen.
Well, they're
advertising a new tablet, an alternative to the iPad, and the whole hook is based around the singer from the darkness playing a song.
And not about the tablets or anything like that. He's not singing a song about
it's one of the old Darkness numbers. I believe in a thing called love.
Good grief.
Absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah.
Extraordinary stuff now. They're no longer going in for regulation commercials, are they? No. They're going in for events. That's the kind
of
thing you do. Now, the other thing that struck me about Madonna was, you know, with MIA and so forth, it's like, you know, drinking the blood of virgins, isn't it? You know what I mean? Old queen surrounded by young princesses, you know, whose neck she feasts on at some point, you know, and then kind of tosses them aside. Like,
have him washed and brought to my tent.
Yes, they're kind of used up. Yes. And the queen will still be there 2 years' time, you know. Yeah. The Britney Spears of a few years ago. She did that with Britney Spears. Was it Christina Aguilera? Did she do the MTV Awards? I can't
Britney
remember.
Britney Spears, I think, yeah.
The Grammys, kissed. You know what I mean? Just surrounded by young strumpets, and then they're cast aside. And Madonna just continues, doesn't she?
Why is she so duffed up, though, for being 53? Is it because she invites the... she wants to appear younger? Is that what it is? Because it really, there's nothing wrong with her being 53.
She looks great for 53.
She looks great for 53. I mean, nobody has a go, do they? Nobody says, gosh, Bruce Springsteen's 62, or whatever he is. I mean, they just don't. But she does get very duffed up, doesn't she?
Do you think Madonna's... the reason she gets duffed up is she's kind of unlovable, isn't she?
Yes, she's a cold fish. Yeah. She is a very cold fish. We all said that at the same time.
Yeah.
There's three people going, she's a cold fish.
She's a cold fish. Yeah. So, further questions. Has any artist recorded any more than two really great albums, says De Big T?
Has any artist recorded any more than two really great?
What, excluding the Beatles and the Incredible String Band? or what's how do we narrow this down?
Or Atomic Rooster.
you
know. I think he's been controversial here, because I think there are loads of more than two great albums.
Well, the Smiths recorded at least four, didn't they? Is that ridiculous? Or is that fighting tool?
I don't know. I wouldn't know about that.
There are a number of big bands who only did one. Guns N' Roses only made one good album.
Yes. Fair enough.
We're not going to argue with that.
No. We wouldn't argue with that at all. Paul Simon is recorded about half a dozen really great albums. Mark, you're looking at me as if you're not sure.
No, I'm not. Paul Simon's a really good choice. I'm actually just trying to think. It's mostly one great record, isn't it?
Paul Simon is my current, winner of the 60s and 70s and 80s, actually. You know, that when it comes to the final reckoning, Paul Simon will emerge greater than everybody. That's my current theory. So, having gone back and listened to a whole lot of Paul Simon albums,
they do stand
not
up,
long ago, they stand up remarkably well. They sound better now than they ever did before. Go back. Here's my advice to you. If you've got nothing to listen to this weekend, go and listen to There Goes Rhyming Simon.
Yeah, that
it's
is
an absolute masterpiece. Yeah.
And hasn't dated. Weird. I don't know why.
Hasn't dated.
Trouble Water, most of that has not dated.
Not at all.
The title track has slightly.
So earlier in the year, before the football season, I wrote a column which proved to be enormously prescient, saying, "Is there anything in entertainment that can hold a candle to the hijinks and the craziness provided by the Premier League?"
It's delightful, isn't it?
And I think, in the last 24 hours, this is just
absolutely,
I've been proved absolutely right, haven't I?
Yeah.
Extraordinary. I have to say this. Last night I went to a very nice literary kind of reception. Penguin Books were launching a whole load of new non-fiction books. And they'd taken a very smart restaurant in the West End and invited a load of people, and they had their authors, talking a little bit about their book, and then everybody had a fine piece of fish.
And they're all having probably quite sort of highfalutin conversations about, have you read Virginia Woolf?
There's Don.
I've read Ulysses by James Joyce three times. And
it's amazing.
Enjoyed it,
it's full of kind of broadsheet journalists, and people from the radio, people from arts programs. You know how I got in there, I do not know, but I was the youth policy, and there's kind of Oxford Dons, and there's leader writers from the Washington Post, and all kinds of terribly highfalutin. And it just started, my phone goes, and I look, and there's a text from Fraser, and he's about 7:30 last night, going, "Fabio Capello's resigned." And I just sort of turned to the person next to me whispering, because I wasn't sure if anybody was interested.
Tapped a spoon against your glass and said, speech.
No, but here's the point. In that company, you traditionally would not be certain that anybody was going to be interested, would you?
No.
So I said, so this woman next to me, "I'm sorry, I just had a text to say Fabio Capello's resigned."
Like football,
and then the next thing, the whole table is going, "What?"
Yeah.
Oxford Don, Fabio Capello's resigned. You know, Washington Post leader writer, Fabio Capello's resigned. It's a huge story. And the whole room is just humming with what's gone on in the football. Of course, this is the same day that Harry Redknapp's acquitted. You know, Joey Barton's been, told off by the, whoever it is, the Attorney General, over what he might have said on Twitter about other court cases and so forth. And you just think, next to this, if you piled up the whole of music, film, television, politics, all the other kind of sources of gossip and human interest.
It's epic.
There is nothing.
No, it is epic, isn't it?
There is nothing compared to football. How does that happen?
And the brilliant thing is that those two events happen within about 10 minutes of each other. So, which makes you wonder if they might have influenced each other. I don't know.
Well,
the Today programme this morning had a thing, where they played a little piece of interview of Redknapp. 2 or 3 months ago, being asked about, how he would react, what he thought about, actually, I think, the fact that there wasn't an English manager. So he goes to this great big patriotic spiel about, it really ought to be one. And they said, what if they offered it to you? He said, it's a terrible job, but, very tough job. Because you couldn't turn it down if it was offered.
It's a duty.
Oh, yes.
If I were him, I'd spin this out as long as possible, for the get the maximum attention out of it. But I do think it's extraordinary. And the Anfield Cat, of course, the other day, Fraser. For anybody who doesn't know about this, Spurs played Liverpool.
It's 11 minutes into the game, and a cat wanders onto the pitch.
A cat wanders onto the pitch.
Past Brad Friedel.
Doesn't it make you wish that Danny Baker's own goals and gaffes were still going? Because it was always full of an owl sitting on the stanchion.
Danny was telling you nowadays that YouTube has completely made a nonsense of attempting to do own goals and gaffes anymore. Because anything of any note all over the place. And to give you an idea, so cat wanders on 11 minutes.
Walks
in.
Past Brad Friedel, sits down, wanders to the side of the pitch, is picked up by Stuart and relocated. And within 24 hours, the cat has 30,000 followers on Twitter.
Yes. That's so cat.
There is a great line about cats. Dogs have owners, cats have staff, isn't it? It's that idea that cats are just in charge.
But it was famous. It had 720 Twitter followers by the end of the game, didn't it? Anfield Cat. And somebody's got a record now, or it's a clip on the internet. It's just called There's a Cat on the Pitch. And the song goes, you can imagine how that song goes. There's a cat on the pitch. You know, and we'll post a link to it.
That's the new Fenton.
There's nothing compares with football for that kind of thing. So, Mark, we had a musical guest
we've had in the podcast earlier
today. You recorded?
Yes, we did, and they've only just left the building, actually. We had Nigel Clark and Matthew Priest from The Mighty Dodgy. And I have to say, their record came into the office, and he was going to be pretty old, didn't we? I was sceptical, I suppose. Can this really be any good? One's memories of Dodgy, they seem to be something that possibly belonged in the 1990s. And it is, he's a very old-fashioned phrase, it's a bit of a grower.
It is, yeah.
And, you know, and also has, proper, really good songs. With a lot of the kind of character of groups like Fleet Foxes and Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and that kind of the smell of wood smoke about it, actually. And not what I expected at all. And it's a marvellous, and also lovely record. Which I think they talk about, actually, later on, about the idea of just getting older.
You've been listening to the free feed of The Word podcast. The full album-length version is only available to subscribers to the magazine. To sign up and to hear the rest of this podcast, go to www.wordpodcast.co.uk.